This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? And you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick to 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100 so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's UnderdogFantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 115. Today is Thursday, August 31st. And Steve, it is the end of another month. And sadly for us, it seems like an end of another fantasy season, both kind of sputtering out of the playoffs. So we have a show inspired by optimism for next season, but it is a great show topic talking about kind of the two early first round projections for 2024, which I can't believe I'm saying out loud, but it is always a great time to talk about upcoming first round for next year's drafts, because it's the first chance we've had in a long time to look at some of the most exciting names in fantasy. So we'll be doing a lot of that. We've got some fun kind of segments baked in here, if you will, and should be a lot of good, fresh debate for me, Steve, because I haven't looked at a lot of these guys in a minute outside of just following at a high level. But how's it going out there, man, aside from the home leagues, just to rip the Band-Aid?
Yeah, it's good. I guess real quick to touch on the topic, and I don't know if it's a flaw, but we don't really talk about these guys that much because it's kind of
it's
just
not actionable.
It just is what it is, and I don't know. Maybe we should talk about them more. Like, you know, maybe we should have been talking about Acuna's, you know, amazing start to the season and then the run that Betts is on and things like that. But this is a good chance to do that. And I know we like to talk more deeper names and struggling names, things like that, to try and find the value in the margins. But it's fun to look at, fun to talk first round. This was kind of inspired by Rob DiPietro's at Deadpool Hitter on Twitter. I'm sure you know him. He's a super great follow and great in the fantasy community. He does a too early meatball draft that he did last year around this time and then this year. And then tweeted out their early results. And I know a few other shows have done like a recap of this and thought it would be a cool idea to look forward to the first round, because even when we do start to prep in the off season, you know, once we establish who the first round is, there really isn't much to get in about that topic, right? It's more of the sleepers that we like and the guys we're targeting in later rounds are guys, quote unquote, bold predictions. And a lot of times that isn't, involve first round players, right? You're not going to have a bold prediction.
At most, it feels like we'll talk about kind of the area of the draft that we like to start in because of XYZ players, but we're not really like breaking them down, right?
Yeah, exactly. So this is fun. It's fun because there is an ADP, right? That's also plays into it. Like, once the first round is kind of set, it's kind of set, right? Like, we're taking a guess at it now, or at least giving our rankings to it without any influence.
Yeah, skimming.
So, yeah, which is
skimming
cool.
Both of our lists, because Steve and I, one of the fun segments here is we both kind of blindly created our first round list and no ADP. So there's some banter rolled in. We'll tease that one. But looking at our list, we do have some disparities. So it's going to lead to great conversation for sure. But to the not so great conversation, Steve, and I know that's not why everyone's tuning in.
You're really getting me to talk. Yeah, I know.
I'm in my semifinals. Yeah. I had the bye week. I was pumped about it, and I'm playing my brother, who I beat in the championship of our home league on a tiebreaker about 6 years ago. So this is kind of the revenge match. I kind of knew I was screwed out of the gate just with karma. And yeah, the guy's got like an 1100 OPS, 33 innings with like a 106 ERA. So I'm pretty much already toast. It would take a miracle comeback. And I've accepted it. It's what you talked about like a month or so ago, where you feel the grace of not caring anymore once you're eliminated. But you are also freshly bounced as well, it seems.
Yeah. Around this time last week, I was probably in your brother's position, so don't give up there. I somehow ended up losing.
It slipped away.
16 homers, a .308 average, and a .937 OPS. My pitching was absolutely horrible. Like JP France gave up 10 runs, which is like more runs than he given up all year. And then he went against the same team yesterday and gave up like one run in six innings. It was just so frustrating. Sure. But for the last like month, my team has just been absolutely raking. I have a newfound ace in Cole Reagans. It's just one of those few stretches where like you're hitting four homers every night. It's continued this week, which has only made me more frustrated. But I ended up losing on a tiebreaker. Our first tiebreaker was head-to-head matchup, and I lost that head-to-head matchup. I think we're going to change that next year. Like, it shouldn't be based on just 1 week, right? Like, that's a tough thing to – that's a pretty random thing.
Would you go to the playoff seeding?
Seeding or maybe roto points, but probably seeding. Like, I think there needs to be more weight involved in, like, your full body of work in a head-to-head matchup, but –
I agree with that. And that's how I beat my brother was the seeding thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, my sob story, I had George Kirby and obviously for a separate team, Chase Silseth, both scratched this week and both of them had the Oakland A's lined up. Mm-hmm. So that was brutal, as well as some other things. So we'll see. It's not over till it's over. But yeah, that's pretty much a summary of our sob stories.
My week essentially when it was like, you know, on Wednesday it was like 13-1. Thursday it was like 9-4. Friday 8-5. Saturday 8-6. And then what did me in, and this is just so ironic, they needed a save to take the lead in saves and tie the matchup 7-7. And they got a save from Evan Phillips, who I dropped early in the year when he was in the closer role. And he was up there. The Red Sox were down by five, hit back-to-back homers in the eighth to make it a three-run game. And I also thought that there was a chance that Phillips wasn't going to pitch because he pitched 2 days in a row before that. But they still threw him out there, even though the Dodgers don't have an off day this week. So it was super frustrating. And another guy who we really liked, Albert Alzolay, got a one-out save on Saturday. So I can't really complain because my pitching was so, so bad. Like, every stream I had was horrible. I had a 5.57 ERA in 85 innings. That's hard to do. So, you know, no hard – if I had any okay pitching, I would have won. But it's just frustrating considering my team is playing the best that it's been all year. And
yeah, you know, it's like home.
Yep.
Truly like a game of inches when it's like, oh, if just this one thing wouldn't have happened, I actually would have gone on to win it. That always stinks. But yeah, I'll keep you posted. I'll briefly follow up next week on it. But I am, if it's not me, I will be cheering for my brother because in our 22 year league history, he is one of the few left who has never won it. And he's been the bridesmaid many a time. So yeah, not good luck this week, but if he makes it to the finals, I'll be pulling for him. Let's segue over to the first round, Steve. And this is room for optimism. I won't even mention that I rostered Acuna last year when he had the worst season of his career before he did this. But now that that's been mentioned, he is certainly the consensus number one overall. Spoiler alert. But Steve, why don't we just do we want to just do this by you kind of rattling off your first round?
Let's do every other. Let's go our first, my first pick, your first pick.
Okay, so you had Acuna first, correct?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
I did.
As did I. Well, let's talk about Ronald Acuna. As I mentioned last year, it did not look anywhere nearly this good, but he was coming off of the injury. And really, it was like the batting average was low. He was actually stealing, but the power output when he did come back was kind of low. Just had the 15 homers in 119 games in 2022. This year, the power has definitely notched back up. He's got 29 homers in 131 games, but it is the 61 steals that has just been otherworldly. When you look at what everyone else is doing in this list, I think it's the stolen bases that even dwarfs the 335 batting average, which is insane. But looking at all of it together, including the best team in the majors that's led to 119 runs and 79 RBIs. I mean, this guy could end up with just video game stats. Like you said earlier this year, Steve, he absolutely has a shot at the best fantasy season. I know we were talking about Bonds, but these counting stats are going to be nuts. The steals total, it's probably going to end up being something like a 35-70 year, hitting over 330. So not sure what can be said other than he is the consensus number one. And maybe the question is he so good? And is he holding the one spot with such a gap between one and two that this is where you want to draft no matter what? Because Acuna is a world beater right now.
I think you set your KDS to 1-2 and then whatever else you feel comfortable with. Normally it's been like you set your KDS in the middle or towards the end, depending on where you were, because there wasn't a consensus number one since like Mike Trout was in his prime. I think that it's pretty safe to say that Acuna is a consensus number one, if not Acuna and the next guy we'll talk about as a 1-2. I also think there's some room for improvement with Acuna, especially in the power department. He's hitting a ton more ground balls than he normally has. Like, he hit a lot more last year at 47% ground balls. It's up to 49.5. And from 2018 to 2021, it was, you know, low 40s, high 30s. You know, he had 41 homers in 2019. I know that was the rabbit ball year, but all the bad ball metrics were similar, and it was just, you know, he was hitting more fly balls. Like, it's the best hard hit rate of his career other than the shortened 2020 season. Bauer rate is back up to where you wanted to see, up at 11%, which is more than what it was in 2019 when he hit those 41 homers. So, you know, the X slug shows that there should be some room for improvement there in the power department too. It's a 640 X slug versus 569 slug. I know that doesn't sound crazy, and the 569 slug is still amazing, but I'm not saying anywhere near that the 29 homers are a little disappointing, but it's like, you know, I would have thought that Acuna would have had like 35 homers by now and maybe like 50 steals or something like that. That sounds ridiculous, like complaining or nitpicking that, but I think there is some room for growth in the homer department, and I also think it would be hard to expect that many stolen bases again next year. But like, hey, you know, I think 30-30 is like the floor with him. So yeah, he is my first overall pick.
Yeah, in terms of like under the hood stuff, it couldn't be more encouraging that he's cut his strikeout rate from the 23.6% that it was at in 22 and 2021, the exact same number, down to 12%. So insane. Almost cut the K's insane. In half.
Absolutely insane.
The walks ticked up a little bit from last year. And you're right, Steve, the ground ball rate is interesting in terms of like, oh my gosh, it's insane. So he's got the 335 average, and your gut reaction is like, well, that's got to come down too. His XBA is 335 on Savant. On Savant.
And honestly, I would take a little bit more strikeout rate if that means more fly balls and more homers, right? I would take striking out 16% of the time, 17% of the time, which is still amazing. If he traded some of those ground balls for some power or home runs. But yeah, there's really, it's insane that we're trying to nitpick this at all. He's just crazy.
I think it just leads to the natural question of like, what are you drafting next year when you, and obviously at the one overall, you want it to be an insane return, but you can't really expect this. So like what would you expect? Like 30 to 35, 40 to 50 steals and an average. That's,
yeah. Like two, anywhere 300 from like,
plus.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could, you know, he's hit 280 before and had really good years, right? Like I would expect anywhere. I don't think he's a 280 hitter. I think that's on the low side. I would expect like, you know, 290 from anywhere from 290 to 320 from anywhere from 30 to 45 homers on the high end, and like 30 to 50 steals, right? That's yeah. He's entering his age 26 season. Like this is his prime. Like these are the years that he's going to do it.
Yeah, and the steal rate. I mean, he's been caught stealing 11 times this year, so he's got a 84% success rate on the base paths. No reason why that should stop. So, yeah, Ronald Acuna, one overall, and I just think it's going to be the most clear-cut one we've had, like you said, since the Trout days. So, super exciting. Great to be able to talk about him. Moving to number two, that Steve, it looks like we both have consensus as well at number two, and that is Mr. One-way player for next year, Shohei Ohtani. So that's our working assumption here, right, Steve?
Yes. We texted when we were putting these together. We're assuming that he is not pitching next year. So even in like the NFBC formats or in Fantrax where you could use him as one player, or even in some leagues where you know you get both stats no matter where he is, we're assuming he is just a hitter. But that being said, he is good enough a hitter to be the second overall player, and you know you could make an argument too that he could be number one too for me. But I would just put Acuna slightly ahead of him. But Ohtani's that good that I would put my KDSQ like the Kentucky Derby style, where you put your order in for where you want to draft, and they do kind of an order based on that. I would put my order in 1-2, and then you know. Depending on where I feel most comfortable, maybe towards the back end of the first round to double up on hitters. But I would put Ohtani 1-2, my order 1-2 because of Ohtani and Acuna. They're that good.
Yeah, it's fair. And under the hood, at least just scanning like plate discipline, not that much has changed. I mean, last year he had reduced the strikeout rate already from 30% down to 24. It stayed there this year. He's taken walks a little bit more. It's really the batting average that for 3 years running now, it's like everyone's talked about how he's evolved as a pitcher, but in 2021, his average was 257, 2022, 273. This year, it's sitting at 307 right now. The pop has maintained. He's probably going to eclipse his career high of 46 homers in 2021. And the steals should be right around that like 20 to 30 range. It makes you wonder a couple things. I mean, the power, because he has yet to homer since the UCL issue. Is that right?
I think he might have had one, but
he's still hitting. Yeah. I know he's getting doubles and triples. And
he hit a ball like 118 miles an hour last night. You know.
Yeah, so you would think the power is here to stay. The other question is just if he doesn't have to mentally think about pitching and focus on pitching, what would a step forward look like for Ohtani? And I don't know the answer to that, Steve, but it's just like he's proven time and time again that he's not of this planet. So is this just going to be another chapter of him blowing us away by, you know, maybe he gets up to Judge type of power output. Maybe he's the one who's hitting 335 like Acuna is this year. Like, I don't know what it looks like, but I do agree that just like the raw talent, he's not as young as Acuna, but yeah, it'll be age 30 season and he's certainly not slowing down in terms of his production, talent, everything. So yeah, I couldn't agree more that the KDS is 1 and 2 for Acuna Ohtani. Where else do we want to go with Ohtani here?
Similar to you last year, I'll get in my privileged person complaint. I had Ohtani last year, which was, you know, he's definitely better pitcher last year, but, you know, his last 3 years OPS was 964, 875, then 1071. Of course, I had him for the 875 OPS. He had 34 homers last year. He's already got 44 with a month to go. So I still love Ohtani. He's my favorite player, if not one of my favorite players. But, yeah, I also think there's an outside chance that, like, if he signs a one-year deal while he's recovering from TJ to, like, improve his value or pitch himself to a team, like, he could get, like, outfield eligibility if he plays a few games there since he doesn't have to worry about pitching. I know before that DH rule where you could stay in as DH and pitcher that they made for him, he played a few innings in the outfield and got outfield eligibility in a few leagues. But, I mean, he's a freak. He could do whatever he wants out there. He could probably play shortstop if he wanted to. But I don't know. That's just a fishing trip of mine. There's no... nothing I read or anything like that, but just the thought that came to mind that, you know, if he does get, if and when he does get TJ, maybe he could pitch himself to a team to try and provide some value that way, at least a few innings and maybe some sneak in some eligibility that way. But yeah, like this is the best underlying numbers of his career. A 20.1% Bauer rate. I was actually second to 2021. That's crazy. But yeah, the K rate, walk rate, all improved from last year. Best hard hit rate of his career. This guy is a unicorn. And even if he's not pitching, he is worthy of a top two selection in my book.
Yeah, I think though, compared to Acuna, maybe the one thing with Ohtani is we'll probably watch the month of September with a closer microscope just with the injury.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think we need to overblow that. The fact that, you know, he was hitting one of the hardest balls he's hit in his career like days after is
he already did it, right? Like his 2019, he didn't pitch and was recovering from Tommy John, right? I think that's correct.
Yeah that's a good point. A good point.
And then he started pitching in 2020 and they shut that down and fully became a pitcher in 2021 again. But his 2019, he played 106 games, so he did miss some time there. He had 18 homers and an 848 OPS. So a little down from what he did in the year before, too, before he had the surgery. So something to keep in mind, but I think he is a better hitter now than he was in 2019 as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's indisputable, but I think just a little something to watch definitely. And will be something we talk about all offseason along with the rest of the industry. The next guy we have a split on for the third pick of the first round, but we are going to take our first ad break and we'll be right back.
This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? And you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick to 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100 so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's UnderdogFantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
Okay, so Steve, not sure how much weight we're going to put into the kind of this single day prep, but we've got our first dispute here. So why don't you start us out with your number three pick, and then I'll give mine, and we'll kind of dance around it.
I got Bobby Witt number three. There was a lot of guys I considered for this spot. I could see an argument for anywhere from like the third to like the eighth player, at least on my list that I have.
This gets to like a tier for sure.
But I think that Bobby Witt is just like maturing as a hitter. And, you know, the flaws in his game are slowly evaporating away. And I think he has the most upside to be similar to Acuña or Otani, right? Like, I think that if there isn't a number one overall player that isn't Acuña or Otani, I think it could be Witt, just because of the power and the speed and, you know, the improving plate skills and batting average. I know I was basically out on him last year.
Yeah, I wanted to razz you a little bit. What's changed?
He is becoming like Nolan Arenado with 40 steel speed, in my mind. Like, the only flaw in Nolan Arenado's game was that he wasn't like a 10 to 12% walk guy. I don't think that Bobby Wood ever will be that. And yes, that's going to keep his OPS down and his on base down in OBP leagues and somewhat deflate his real life value. But everything that we care about in this game of fantasy baseball that we know and love, Bobby Witt is great at. He hits homers, he steals bases, and he is just getting better and better at that each year. He's going to be 24 next year. Like, I think we're going to see only more improvements. Like, those flaws in this game, the chase rate and the whiff rate, have just gotten better year over year from last year. I think we'll see even more growth as he matures as a hitter. Sure, there's some holes in the team context and the home park isn't great, but I mean, he's got 27 homers and 38 steals and he plays half his game in Kauffman Stadium this year. So I don't really care about that. I think he's that good. So I'll take Bobby Witt Jr. number three.
Yeah, and the Royals should continue to improve. And one thing that's kind of interesting, I know we're not to some of these other names yet, but his counting stats on the runs and RBIs actually look a notch mm-hmm. better than some of his peers. And that's surprising, just with the OBP that you mentioned, which, by the way, is 179th in the league. And then on top of that, the fact that he plays with the Royals, you just wouldn't think that the counting stats would be above average compared to some other people of his ilk. I think just what he's doing this year, like the hard contact rate is a lot better than it was last year. The steals, like you mentioned, Steve, is just clearly he's having fun with the new rules and base paths. 38 steals, it'll probably end up in the mid 40s. So yeah, he's one of the few guys who you could probably project out to 70 homers plus steals confidently. Part of me wonders, I mean, that it's great to see that the strikeout rate dropped from like 21% down to 18%. But the chase rate is still very concerning, mm-hmm. To where that you don't really see that chase rate match up with the strikeout rate. But I guess that's just a testament of the fact that he's like a bad ball hitter in a way. Yeah, I mean, I like it. I'm trying to be critical because I don't have him number three overall. But I think that he's a pretty much lock for 30-30. In terms of true talent on batting average, I guess 276 is what he's hitting right now in his XBA. They have it 294, mm-hmm. but the XBA last year was 252. I don't think you can split it, but I don't know that I'm signing up expecting him to be like a 285, 290 hitter. I mean, he's made that big of an improvement this year. I don't know. There's just part of me is not sold on the profile from an average standpoint, to where I still think I would probably peg him at like a 265, 270 hitter, 30-30 with kind of a crappy offense. But that's almost the floor. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's not out of the realm to picture him going like 30-50 next year, which is probably why. I mean, that's what you said this year on record, is that I'm low on Bobby Witt, and yes, he could turn around and look like the number one guy in the league, and the upside is kind of what you're excited about with drafting Witt, and years like this is kind of proving the point that at just 23 years old, there's a lot that he could still grow into. So, yeah, it's hard to knock it too much. I think he's definitely in this tier for me. I just don't know that he's, like, leading it for me.
In the minors, he had 295, 285, struck out, you know, 24, 22% of the time, and took more walks. So I think that as his game matures at the MLB level, like, I think his true talent is that 280, 290 batting average. Like, I think there's only going to be growth as he adapts to what he needs to fix in his game. Like, I don't see why that chase rate isn't going to get better, like it did this year. The contact rate went up. It just, you know, I don't see regression in any of those. I see growth, and I see a superstar in the making. And I think that I want to be on that side and start to, okay, like, this is going to happen for this player. You know, as far as the chase rate, like, there's different situations. Like, there's two strike chase rates, there's two strike approaches, and he is that good of a hitter that he is able to do things like that, right? Like, he was still a first rounder with a 722 OPS, and I think I personally got caught up in how low that number was, and it made me miss out on you know, arguably the best fantasy year so far out of besides anyone named Acuna or Otani.
Yeah, no, it's fair. He's not far. So for me, I actually had Witt at my number five pick versus three that you had. So
not too far off. Yeah.
Not far off. My number three, which is probably influenced a little bit by kind of my philosophy, where I like average guys. I kind of run from some plate discipline guys. It can be home league setting. It's also kind of a old philosophy of, like, don't screw up your first round pick. And that's where I went here with number three, with Mookie Betts, who himself is quietly having a terrific, terrific season with a 314 batting average, 36 homers, 10 steals. So slowing down on the base paths for sure. But 94 RBIs and 112 runs. So I think looking at these two side by side, we were just talking about how Witt could be a 70 home run plus steal guy. That said, Mookie is probably, you're probably going to be lucky to get 50 home runs plus steals. Having said that, he had 35 homers last year. He has 36 and counting this year through 125 games. And what's impressive about Mookie is, if you look at his spray charts, it looks a lot different this year. Like, he is just pulling the hell out of the ball, and it just looks like he has an absolute approach that he's taking here, and it's really working for him. A lot of the other stuff is as good as it's always been, a 15.6% K rate, a 13% walk rate, so he's getting on base a ton, which is certainly helping the 112 runs scored. So I think you're probably... Then on the average side, real quick, if you look at the past 5 years for Mookie Betts, he's kind of, the mean looks like it's like 290, 295. This year it was 315. So I think you're probably getting, in terms of expectations, 15 points of batting average, maybe more. And then the counting stats should be, you know, notably more, maybe 10, 15, 20% more than what Witt's doing, but you're just trading off a ton of steals, which is obviously a huge part of 5x5 leagues. But Mookie's only 30. So I think we kind of are writing him off too quickly. I know he had the injuries. I know that you were also a little ho-hum on Mookie, Steve. But when I look at the board, it's just one that it's like almost what Jose Ramirez was this year. And I know that didn't work out, but it's also like, when you miss, you're not missing by much. And I think this is like your vanilla oatmeal pick that, like, yeah, he might not finish one overall or even three overall, but he's probably going to finish top 10, top 12. And everything under the hood looks really good for Mookie as well. So thoughts on Mookie Betts?
Yeah, I had him six. I think the tiebreaker was just the steals total. Like, Betts is great for 10. I think he's a lock for like 10 to 15, essentially. That's what he's been the last 5 years, essentially. But I also think that there might be a little bit of recency bias here, just because he is having such an amazing year. He has a 1020 OPS. That makes it pretty easy to forget that he had an 873 and 854 the 2 years before that, which aren't horrible by any means. Like, he was still a first rounder. and he did have 35 homers in just 142 games last year and only played 122 games in 2021. But I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I think that those years are possible outcomes for Betts in 2024, especially as he ages a little bit. You know, he bats leadoff. That could sometimes, you know, he had 82 RBIs last year and just 117 runs. I say that because he already has 112 this year. So he's going to finish with, like, what, close to 130? Absolutely insane. Yeah, I like it. I just think that there might be a little bit more upside, whereas, like, this was the year for the upside for Mookie Betts. It's hard to do that 2 years in a row. Like, and maybe I'm saying this because I got burned on Paul Goldschmidt. I say that lightly because Paul Goldschmidt's still having a really good year, but it's not the MVP year, right? I think that sometimes I think there might be an MVP tax on Betts this year, and there might just be a little bit of regression, which is still really good. Like, yeah, you're not going to mess up your first round pick if you draft Mookie Betts. Like, you know, even his 2021, where he had an 854 OPS, was still really, really good. I agree and get the logic.
Yeah, I think it comes down to how you weight, because it's like, the sexy stats are homers and steals, right? Yeah.
And a head-to-head league, it might not be that important, right, too, with steals. So maybe you bump bets up there, too.
Yeah, and it's just like, yeah, that's a good point compared to Roto. But, like, what would the gap need to be on runs and average for bets to look better than Witt? Because Witt's going to look better on homers and steals.
It needs to be 30. It needs to be 30 points of average and then, like, you know, the 50 combined runs and RBI. It needs to be this.
Which is what it looks like this year.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a good point, though, that, yeah, it's not too far removed from Betts looking like kind of a fringy back end of the first rounder type of. Yeah. Yeah. Which is.
If that's your downside, that's a good first round pick. Yeah.
Yeah. It is. Okay. Well, let's move to number four, Steve, if you want to start us out.
This one is probably the biggest controversy, at least in our little mock here, our little blind comparison, and definitely has the biggest reach for me, the reach feel. I have Fernando Tatis Jr., number four. I say that where he's coming off. I think it's a pretty massively disappointing season. Like, you're happy they stayed healthy. You're happy they played 113 games. Like, he's been pretty good for missing the first, whatever, 20 games of suspension, but it's just 20 homers. 23 steals is nice in the 113 games, but you know, a 781 OPS, a 194 ISO. Like, Tatis never had his ISOs by year was 272, 295, 328, and then 194. Yeah. I think, though, my logic here is that this is Acuna from 2022. He had two surgeries. He's coming off the suspension. The Padres have been an absolute dumpster fire. Like, there's still a lot to like about what Fernando Tatis does. And I think once, you know, it's like with pitchers, right? Like, there's an old adage, like, you know, Saras always says that you want the pitcher the second year back from Tommy John, right? Well, I want my hitter the second year back from a torn ACL, a torn shoulder surgery, a wrist surgery, when Tatis said both. So I think that, you know, maybe there'll be a bit of a discount. Maybe I won't have to take him at four. But I still think that there's a lot to like under the hood with the batted ball metrics and the quality of contact. The chase and whiff rate, you know, they've been bad in the years that he has been the best player in baseball. So, you know, he's underperforming his XBA, his X-slug. There's some luck factor in there. But the hard hit percentage, the max EV, the barrel rate are still really good. And I think they're only going to get better as he enters his age 25 season and becomes a year further away from the steroid suspension and, more importantly, the surgeries.
Yeah, there are positive stories for sure on cutting the strikeout rate from 28 down to 22. Yeah, like you mentioned, the XBA is at a 292. He's hitting 263.
He also learned a new position.
532.
And became a really good fielder. He's at 97 percentile outfield average in right field. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's been one of those things where it's just been a mess for the Padres this year too. So some of that's probably playing in. That said, what do we make of, like, are you reading into any of the lazy narrative on the steroids? The barrel rate dropped from 2021 at 21% down to 11.5%.
No.
The hard hits down a little bit, but not nearly that much. Do you think this is more surgery related than anything?
Yeah,
kind of tinfoil hat that he never had pop.
I don't think steroids give you a 10% boost in barrel rate. Like, you know, that's a miracle drug. That's not steroids. I think it's the surgeries. I think it's the first year back from the injuries and two major procedures. Two of the worst procedures that you could have as a hitter, right? Shoulder and wrist. Those are scary things. But I think give it some time and he could get back to that elite barrel rate.
So I overlooked Tatis doing this blindly and looking at and just not thinking about Tatis. So I do believe he will be a first rounder in almost any league. Where he slots in is interesting. Had I been thinking of him, I don't know if he would have been fourth for me, but I think he would have been in this tier, Steve. I don't think he would be end of the first round for me.
I think that might be pretty high on him. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the fact that we haven't seen ADPs and stuff, maybe he will be this high. But
okay, let me come back to it. I think I would probably have him rounding out this middle tier.
Got it.
And definitely leading before like the 9 through 12 tier for me. But yeah, we'll see where. He's obviously one that he has a good preseason and he would just shoot up boards. So we know Tatis is, kind of neck and neck with Acuna in terms of perception of raw talent and everything. Mine is kind of that ilk as well, though, and it's Julio Rodriguez, who I have. And Rodriguez
at four.
You know, man, like looking at him next to Witt was really fascinating. He's got him on batting average a little bit with the 286 average, 24 homers, 35 steals, and the counting stats are better too, 82 runs, 87 RBIs and counting. And probably most impressive that a lot of people who have rostered Julio Rodriguez can attest to is just how frosty the start of his year was with a pre-All-Star batting average of 249, and it's been 365 since then. I know that you can kind of put too much weight into splits and everything, but he was ice cold for sure, and it took him a long time to get going. And now we're looking at, you know, seven homers. August is pretty much his best month of the year. It is with a 1,200 OPS, seven homers, and 11 steals. So just watching him, seeing him at, like, the home run derby, he's still just 22 years old. Like, I don't think he's far off from that Acuna Tatis class of like power speed. And for me, it's just, I don't know why, because he actually strikes out a little bit more than Witt. For some reason, I feel like the floor is higher for Julio Rodriguez. Maybe that's not fair, but certainly another guy who could go 70 home runs plus stolen bases. So I have J-Rod at four. Your thoughts, Steve?
I have him at five, so pretty much lockstep with you there. Maybe because, you know, he hasn't really had a quote-unquote bad batting average year. He's at 284, and then now he's hitting 286 this year. I know he's, like, been, like, 30 for his last 40 to raise his average to 286. It was looking like it was going to be a rough year, but I think it's splitting hairs, honestly. It's just a slight preference, and I would be totally fine drafting J-Rod in the first round. Like, this top end, it's the first time in years where I really think you want to be towards the top end of the draft, just because there's so much talent there. Like, if you have the fifth slot and J-Rod's left, like, that's a great place to be. Like, just his line right now, if the season ended today with 24 homers, 35 steals, if you would have signed up for that in the beginning of the season. But there's still a month to go, so he could hit his way to 30-32, even like a 30-40 season is not out of question. Another guy that it's like Witt, like, I can only see him getting better. He's made some improvements in the strikeout department. You know, whiffed a little bit less. It's still part of his game, but that's okay. Like, a lot of guys swing and miss when they're that good a hitter. So it's not a death sentence by any means. The Bauer rate's down a little bit, but not by much. And you sort of would take it with the trade in average and steals for him with what he's been doing right now. So I like J-Rod a lot. And just one pick behind you with my fifth slot.
Anything to add on why you have Witt above J-Rod, Steve?
Yeah, I think that there is some more power potential with Witt. I think that if J-Rod's ceiling is like 30, Witt's might be 40, at least right at this moment. I think he also is a little bit more aggressive on the base paths. Like, there was that period last year in the second half where J-Rod like just didn't steal. I know that's kind of been put to bed this year with his 35 steals, and especially with how much he's ran recently. It's splitting hairs. It's just a slight preference that I'd lean Witt. But you could easily convince me the other way around, but I just think there's a little bit more power upside with Witt and a little bit more stolen base upside, at least aggressiveness for Witt.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I'm looking, I mean, position is kind of a throwaway because
also, yeah,
short
that's,
and outfield.
That's true.
Both pretty deep, but it's always nice to kind of shore up. Although this year we were kind of griping about outfield getting shallow fast. I think Rodriguez got a little bit better of a lineup context, which to me, I feel more confident in the runs plus RBIs, but yeah, they're very, very similar. And I think another player fits in really closely with them to where I look at those three as kind of a three pack that we'll get to in a second. But first, Steve, let's jump to your next pick. If we want to look at the six slot for both of us here.
So I had Betts, which we talked about at six, so we don't need to spend too much time there. So
okay, and I had Witt at fifth. Mm-hmm. So yeah, again, to recap, Steve's got Acuna, Otani, Witt, Tatis, J-Rod, Betts. I have Acuna, Otani, Mookie, J-Rod, Witt, and then a new name on the list, which kind of this one could spark a little discussion. Aaron Judge is who I have at sixth, who obviously not what we were hoping for, but a season where he's had a hip strain, a toe strain, just obviously the Yankees, it's been a dumpster fire this year. But all that to be said, Judge is at 29 home runs in 79 games, so very much still on pace for 50, 60 homers after he did it last year with the .311 batting average. That's probably the thing that when you look at 2021, he hit .287. Last year, he hit .311. This year, the batting average is down to a .263. Now, his XBA is a .291. So the BABIP hasn't been great there, but all of like the hard hit metrics, everything still looks very much like Aaron Judge. The K's have ticked up just a tiny bit. But yeah, like the barrel rate is 27.8. It's ridiculous. Age 31, maybe we're starting to say you're on the wrong side of 30, but like, what does that actually mean for a guy who's, as recent as last year, he stole 16 bases. This year, just 3 on 4 attempts. So the steals are maybe moving out of his game, which hurts around the rest of these names.
Yeah, that was a contract year thing, the Steelers. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty much as much as I'll go into with Judge. I just feel like there are still chapters for him of pure greatness, and I would not be shocked at all if we saw 55, 60 homer year where he hits close to 300. So I threw Judge at six here, but he's definitely smack in the middle of this tier that I would say is like 3 to 8 or 3 to 9. But your thoughts on Judge, Steve?
I have him in my first round. I'd probably bump him up doing this exercise again. The only thing that Judge did wrong this year is run into that wall in Dodger Stadium and
right,
strain his tail. That's it. Like, sure, yeah, there was a hip injury. And I think you have to account for at least budget yourself for at least one IL stint a year. Like, think about this, like,
yeah,
peak Kershaw, or like just off his peak Kershaw, where like he was still the best player, you just had to, or best pitcher, you just had to budget in like, you know, 2 to 3 missed starts or something like that.
Yep.
Judge is still like the best hitter in baseball. You just have to budget in probably 15 missed games, which I don't think is that big a deal because he can hit 50 homers in 140 games.
Are you going to be interested in Judge in first rounds, or are you taking a pass next
year? Yes, okay. I will be.
Yeah, I think we might see a decent discount with, you know, how many of the youngsters are moving up in this range. I don't know that you'll have to get him at six.
I wasn't interested in him this year, and despite that actually being correct because he's only played 78 games so far, I don't think that was a good process. Like, yes, I was right in the sense that the results are that he missed a really good chunk of time, but when he's been on the, had he not missed that time, which I know that's a ridiculous thing to say, and the reason why I'm right, or, you know, was right not to take him, is because of the injury risk, but he has just been so good, when he plays that, like, I think it's worth it, and I don't think it's fair to knock him for sort of a freak injury, even though, you know, the 2 years before that, he played 157 games, 148. Like, I think that's right in line with what he would have played had he not, like, banged his knee into the wall or banged his toe into the wall, which I don't think you should penalize him too much for.
Yeah, he could definitely be in the 60 home runs plus steals with no steals. And on top of that, he could lead all of these names in RBIs. He could hit 300. I think all of those things are still true for Judge. So, yeah, might be a nice discount because, again, I don't know that you'll have to grab him at six. Steve, let's do one more from each of us here before our next break. Who do you have at seven?
At seven, I have Kyle Tucker, like the metronome. Yes. Of the first round. He is just so solid. I think last year was a clear outlier with average. I think he took a step forward from 2021. He had 294 in 2021, hitting 294 again. This year was 257 last year, but he had just a 261 BABIP, where his career BABIP has been much higher. It's been around 300 in all other years, but his rookie year. I think he's a lock for 30-30. He's at 26-26 right now. I just think Tucker is a guy that, you know, may not have the 50-homer upside of Acuna or Otani, or even like the 40-homer upside of those two players, or the 50-steal upside of Witt or Julio, but he is like a lock for 30 and 30 with a good average and being in a great lineup. Doesn't have any of those injury concerns of any of these players. He's been, you know, a model of consistency these last 3 years, even 4 years dating back to the short season. I really like Tucker and think that he is like a perennial underrated first round player. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely. I know we talked about him quite a bit. He was my bold prediction to finish one overall this year. He got off to a slow start. Obviously, it would have been impossible with what Acuña is doing. But it's been a weird year for the Astros anyway, with just the health and Alvarez, Altuve, all that stuff. And now I think it's probably overlooked that Dusty Baker's got him hitting cleanup, and he's just been planted in that sixth slot for like 3 years straight. So I know the 79 runs, when you look at the whole stat line, is where you're like, you know, it's solid, especially when you think there's still a month to go. But for a guy who has like the, you know, that can steal 26 bases, you would hope that he would be a lock for like 100 runs. Hopefully next year, he can just keep this spot in the batting order. And yeah, I think this is a 30-30 290 guy. So yeah, the metronome is exactly right. I know I talked at the start of the season with you, Steve, about how I was surprised how good his plate discipline was. I think on a lot of the PLV stuff, he was like number one in like plate decisions. And it looks like that's still improving, where he cut his strikeout rate even more. Yeah, 13% strikeout rate, and the walk rate is 11.6.
Best of his career.
He's entering his age 27 season next year, which is the power prime. You would like to see him take a step forward, no question, on power, just because he's been able to do what he's done for several years now. But yeah, this is another one that's probably, I guess it's safe to look at this next to Mookie and say, what's the difference? Like, why Mookie over him? And I guess the answer would be, to date, you're getting 30 more runs, and you can probably count on 10, 15 points more batting average. But again, if Mookie's going to top out at like 45 home runs plus steals, and we know that Tucker is good for 60, I'm already starting to question how I position these guys, because I do think Tucker's
I know Mookie's having the amazing year and hitting 315, but I don't know. I think that's a little bit more of an outlier. I could see Mookie hitting anywhere from like 260 to 280, 290 more realistically, sort of where he's been the years past. So Tucker's probably in that range too. This is probably on the higher end of Tucker of batting average too, but I think the steals are convincing for me, and I would probably flip flop Tucker and Betts 6-7 for me going back.
Yeah, it's fascinating, because as we get through more of these names, it's like they're in the same grouping when we talk about like 3-9 in terms of overall value, but the makeup is so different. We're like three of them. Dude, the more sizzling youngsters, and then three of them are like super chalky vanilla production. So it's almost like you want to look at what's there in round two and round three to decide how much volatility versus just super solid floor you want in the first round if you're in pick 3-9.
The more I think about this, the more it's like I kind of want to just set my KDS like 1-2 and then like 9-3 and like be cool with any of those picks. And like, you know, if I get 9, I have an earlier pick in the second round. If I get 3, like, sweet.
Yeah, definitely. So to move over to my 7th pick, it's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum where we're talking about the metronome. This one kind of rounds out what I would call like a mini grouping with Bobby Witt Jr., Julio Rodriguez, and now I've got Corbin Carroll, who himself, age 23, coming off of what's clearly the best year of his short career, with 23 homers, 40 steals, 281 average, 96 runs, so leading that group, but then 65 RBIs way on the other side. So batting order definitely playing there. The D-backs have had an up-and-down season, but they're definitely not like a lineup minus. I think you might put J-Rod and Corbin Carroll at the top of like lineup context, and then Witt beneath them, just in terms of the team around them. But Corbin Carroll has slowed down a little bit in terms of power. I don't have like the ISO splits in front of me, but he had 18 homers pre-All-Star and has had just five since. But the speed has been right on pace. So this is probably like a, I mean, it's going to end up looking like 25, 45, something in that range. And the batting average that's probably in between Witt and J-Rod, although they're right all around kind of that 280 to, if we're buying that for Witt, they're probably all around 280 in terms of expectations. So, yeah, I mean, Corbin Carroll is definitely in this mix. Curious, Steve, where you have him. He's obviously just 23, so the best might be yet to come here. I wouldn't put it past him to have an Acuna-like stolen base season where he could even get up to, like, 60.
Carroll would be much higher for me if it weren't for the fact that his second half downturn coincided with that shoulder injury scare where he swung and left the game and missed only like a few days, but he was quoted as saying that he thought his season was over. It looked scary. It looked like, you know, one of those shoulders that like shoulder injuries that like Michael Conforto had where he just swung the bat and like the shoulder went dead and then he missed a full year. So he would be much higher for me if that scare didn't happen and it didn't coincide with a drop in, you know, the power output. That being said, he has picked it up a bit, at least recently. I think he's, you know, hit a few homers. Yeah, he had homers on the 26th and 27th. But yeah, that was his first homer since the 13th, August 13th. So yeah, he's just got three homers in August, which is concerning. So yeah, and then there was two homers post All-Star break in July. You know, maybe if there's reports in spring that he's fine and there's no, like, you know, recovery or small procedure or anything that he needs to have, maybe I'll be able to bump him up, but I'm still slightly concerned. That being said, yeah, if there's any player that could have like a year what Acuna is doing now, it's probably Carroll with like a 30 homer, 60 steal season. That's probably him, but I'm just a little scared off by the shoulder injury. And hey, maybe that's a fault. I was scared off by Betts last year with that hip injury. That never really bothered him last year. So maybe I'm just being a little too cautious, but I still have Carroll in my top 12 in this 12-team first round. So I'm just a little concerned about the shoulder.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's interesting that all three of them, their home ballparks, like you like look at Carroll, he hits to all fields, but you look at like Chase, you look at Kaufman, you look at Petco, Safeco, always flip them.
Safeco. And now it's Safeco. Now it's like T-Mobile Field or something like that.
Oh yeah, right. I think actually Carroll has the best home ballpark.
Yeah, but since they removed it or added the humidor in Arizona, it's been a lot more pitcher friendly. Why can't one of these like guys play in like Coors or Yankee Stadium or something, you know?
Right. That would be a big mover. But I think those three are just fascinating boom bust ones compared to Betts and Tucker.
I don't know. Like those guys seem to have pretty high floors too though, right? Like, I don't know. It just seems,
I mean, it's just track record.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, it's like sometimes, I don't know, when you look back at like some of the horror stories of the past, right? Like Bellinger or something, mm-hmm. like we never thought it could come down. But when you are just 23, 24, it's like they have yet to really go through.
Speaking of shoulder trouble, a tough struggle. Yeah.
But it's like, I look at a guy like Kyle Tucker who two seasons in a row has had a really bad first half. And it's like, he always rights the ship. And you would hope that any of those guys, I guess J-Rod did. So yeah, I mean, I don't disagree, Steve, that like they're as exciting as they are, it does feel like there's a high floor just for how good they are. So maybe that's just talking through this. The upside is probably worth it for the youngsters just because they could go off and have like a one overall season.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. We got the back half here, or the back third of the first round, but we're going to take our second ad break and we'll be right back. All right. So, Steve, do you want to set us off with your number eight, which should dovetail in because my number eight was Tucker. So we can talk about the same name here. You got him eight. I got him nine.
Freddie Freeman. Man, what a career Freddie Freeman's putting together. It's like,
doesn't he deserve to be higher than this too? Yeah, probably. It's just like,
and like, this is the highest he's ever going to go. Like, and he'll probably be around this spot, I would think.
Talk about the metronome, dude. Like, this guy is Hall of Fame. Like,
and if you maybe like our if lifetime you like your of batting, fantasy. If you like your batting average, like the last 3 years of batting average, 337, 325, 300. Oh, wow, bad year. 341, 295, 309. Like, he is just unbelievable.
Yeah, it doesn't get better.
Doesn't slug below 500. He is... Like, I think if he retired,
he's handmade for my league because we count doubles in our league and like strikeouts and walks. Like he is like a perennial number one on my settings. But yeah, continue.
If he retired this year, would he be in the Hall of Fame? I think so.
The 14 seasons, 2,000 hits. I don't know. It would be a fringy one. 316 homers. The career batting average is 301. He's definitely like 902 career OPS.
Like, I mean, I don't know. I would have a hard time keeping him out. Maybe I'm a little biased, but
I think he's a few seasons. He can be fine for a few seasons.
Yeah, yeah. If he just finishes out his career, like, yeah, he's a Hall of Fame.
Does he just have what's his World Series resume? Just one?
I don't know if he has one. When did Atlanta win theirs?
Didn't he get theirs and then walk right after that? Won the World Series in 2021 over the Houston Astros.
Yep. So he's got a ring.
So just the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's a big one in Atlanta because he went through kind of the down years. Yeah. Freddie Freeman, man. Like, is there another player like in our lifetime of fantasy drafts? His mean pick is probably like 9 through 12.
Yeah, yeah, like 14.
And that's where we got him here. But, yeah, so getting into the actual, you know, analysis, the 337 batting average is video game. You would think it has to come down a little bit. His XBA is 321, which is insane, and his XBA has been really high in recent years just because he hits the ball. You know, like his line drive rate is – nuts. His plate approach is incredible with a 16% strikeout rate. The steals are what's really buoying him up. Like, if we believed in the steals, because he's got 24 homers, 17 steals this year, which with the new rules, with the base paths, all that stuff, it's not nothing that he's attempted 18 steals this year. But he's going to be in his age 34 season, so I don't know that we can look at this as like a 25-15 guy, which I think is what holds him down. Because everything else with the runs, the RBIs, the average, it's just he's kind of a B grade on both pop and speed, which I think is what keeps him down here. It's just the most solid floor as you're going to find.
Yeah, I think he's... pretty much, you know, he's not a zero in stolen bases. Like, I think he is good for 10. He had 13 last year with the old stolen base rules. So, and who knows? Maybe there's a little bit more homer upside. At least there was this year when he only had 21 last year and 24 this year. So, you know, he could creep up close to 30, and I could see him being like 25, 10. 330 again next year, which, you know, is pretty awesome. Like, talk about like a safe pick, like Freddie Freeman is that.
Yeah, and in terms of lineup context or position, this is the first corner that we've talked about.
Yeah, yeah. First
base. So that could factor in for sure.
Witt might have third base eligibility, I think, in some leagues. I'll look up the number of games that he's played at third this year. Right now, he's played. Witt has not played third this year, so he is just going to be shortstop next year, which is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it would be nice to see if Freddie could go on a little power binge in September. I think I could scoot him up ahead of a name or two, but short of that, I think you're really drafting kind of the average more than anything here and knowing that the position works there. But when you look at everybody else and we're saying home runs plus RBIs and we're saying 50 or for some of these guys 60 or for Acuna like 100, then you look at Freeman and you're like, yeah, you can kind of pencil in 40. So there's a definite drop off there, which is the only thing, but whatever. You're still loving what you're getting from Freddie Freeman. So that was your number eight, Steve. My number eight was Tucker. My number nine was Freeman. So let's go to your number nine, who is actually just out of my top 12.
So I have a soft spot for this player. I don't know if I've ever really rostered him in like my home league or like a league that I've cared about a ton. I definitely have him in a few spots in NFBC, although I haven't done great there, so maybe that's more telling. My number nine is Yordan Alvarez. Talk about a zero in speed, but I think that they're... And it's hard to say this because we haven't seen it, but I think that there is a Judge 50-homer, 60-homer season in that bat. Like, it's him and Judge that are, like, the two best hitters, I think, on the planet. And Yordan may have more injury risk than Judge, considering he's been out for more soft tissues. He doesn't play the field really as much. It's never anything freak accident that like Judge has. It's more like oblique or his knees, which, you know, maybe he's a little bit more past those knee issues. His hand, which was a concern last year, right, and heading into this season. Mm-hmm. But I think he is just that good of a hitter that the upside is there. Like a 283 ISO, 23 homers in 86 games, like, it's him and Judge that could do that sort of stuff. And he also, I think, has a higher batting average floor than Judge, with hitting 293 this year, 306 last year. Like, his OPS floor to me is like 950, which is just amazing. I know there's no speed, and I know there's probably more injury risk than you would hope. And to be honest, I would probably flip-flop him and Judge. Judge I have 10th. Which, you know, we already talked about, so we don't have to go into it. But I still really like Yordan. He's definitely a consideration in the back end of the first round for me, for sure.
Yeah, he's such a temptation there, like, if he's available, because I'm with you that, like, watching him when he's on the field, when he's healthy, he really is one of the best hitters in the game. Plate discipline's great. Just everything about, like, the barrel rate, the launch angle, like, it comes with the average. Like, it just feels like almost like a, I don't know, like
if you were to build a hit, if you were to build a hitter in a lab, you would build Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah, he reminds me of like some of the old school mashers, like a Carlos Delgado or Cliff Floyd or like somebody that just crushes the baseball. My thought, I mean, obviously injury is a thing, so just to like play it out. If you draft him, what number of games are you happy with? Like a 140, 130?
I'd be happy with 130. His 135, his 2022.
Okay.
Because so, I think there's this, more this homer year, upside. Yeah.
So than this year, he played what? The 86 is where he's at?
Yeah. Just, so there's 87. There's what, 30 games left for, you know, call it 30 for most teams.
Okay. So then this would be 64% of what you're hoping for next year. So I just want to tease out the 23 homers. So for what you're hoping for, it would land at a 36 homer pace, at least what he's done this year. Like, so 292 average, 36 homer. Yeah, so like you said, last year, that would be pretty much two seasons in a row where he's on pace for like 37 homers. He hit 306 last year, 292 this year. So he's probably, you know, safely, I think you could call him like a 295, 300 hitter, 36 homers, 100. Like, it is really, really good.
Maybe,
I just don't know, next to all of these other, like, what is the upside that he maybe plays 150 games?
Maybe I'm also too blinded by the 27 homers and 87 games in 2019 in the rabbit ball. Maybe that's clouding my hope for a 50 to 60 homer season, and his high end might be more like 45.
Maybe. Which is great. Like a 300, it's just calls into question, like, is that just more an early second round guy compared to some of the, just because he's a zero in speed, where my head's
and
at.
The injury risk. Yeah, you're probably right.
But I know you love the guy, and I did have him written down here, and then I started looking at other names, and I was like, oh, he's like first four out for me at least. Okay, so that was your number nine. I had Freddie Freeman at nine. So then I go to number 10, where you have Judge, but I have a name we have yet to talk about, which is Jose Ramirez. It's another one that is very much a fixture in the first round at this point. I was particularly high on J-Ram this year. I think I might have actually taken him one overall in the too early pitcherless mock draft. And it's just been, you know, minus the, you know, down goes Anderson, a pretty quiet year for Jose Ramirez. 21 homers, 22 steals, 277 average. Runs RBIs right now, 77 runs, 71 RBIs. He has played, pretty much all games minus like the suspension. So I don't know. I mean, last year we saw a 30-20 year where he hit 280. This year it's looking like it's going to be around like 25-25, 280. I guess last year the 126 RBI is what has really dropped off, to where this year that's probably going to be in the double digits as well as the runs. So this is like the most boring pick in the first round, right? At age, going into his age 31 season. Like, I'm not that excited if I got J-Ram, other than the fact that I'm addressing third base. And it's not hurting me in any categories. But
I still think it's a good pick. Like, it's not,
good,
it's
for
boring,
sure.
Boring, but it's not good. It's not bad, what I mean to say. And I also think that, you know, he's put up much higher WRC plus totals over the last 3 years, that I could see him having a bit of a bounce back where he pushes that slug closer to 500 than the 486 and the OPS above 850. And if he does that while doing 25-25, like, that makes a difference in the margins of a first round pick. You know, he is getting older, so maybe, you know, we adjust expectations down a little bit. He's turning 31 next month, so he'll be 32 by the end of the next season. But, you know, he's a guy that pulls fly balls, and I could see this being a bit of an outlier and him creeping towards the 30-35 homers again. I would not be surprised if he does have that next year.
Yeah, he's got a tricky Statcast profile as well. I mean, for one, we haven't talked about the fact that his strikeout rate is 10% and his walk rate is 10%, so that's amazing. What's weird is the last 2 years, his barrel rate's dropped off quite a bit, and the hard hit rate is kind of, you know, around average, if not above average. So it's just, it's interesting to me, Steve. His XBA is actually a 298 this season, above his 277. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, he must be you know, crushing the ball or have an insane line drive rate. And he really isn't. So I don't know if just his BABIP is super, super low. But yeah, it is a little alarming that, like you said, he'll be age 32 by the end of next season and he has a below average barrel rate. So I don't know that 30 homers, I mean, unless it's just the fact that sometimes it doesn't always track with like pole fly ball.
Yeah, he's
hitters.
A pole fly ball guy. That's what I was going to say.
Like, so that's
when he hits his homers, he pulls them down the line, especially from the left side. So I'm not, you know, Jose Ramirez barrel rate isn't like the thing that I look at. Like his career high was 11.1. In 2021, which is good, but like he's always been like a 5, 8, 6s, and they've been really good years in there, right? You know, maybe the fact that the max
it's
EV
a solid
is down,
pick, but I
yeah, but I don't know.
Yeah, I do think this discussion here though is why I'm kind of saying give me 3 to 9. Like
sure.
There's just a little bit less, you know, warm and fuzzy. When I get to like the third or fourth round and I'm like, who's my first rounder? Like go back and look at your roster. And it's like, again, it's nice to address a corner. But I'm not as jacked as a lot of the other names. So, okay. We're running a little long. So Steve, you've got J Ram at 12. So you did have him rounding out mm-hmm. your first round. You had Judge at 10. You had Corbin Carroll at 11. So here's where, had I known that Tatis Jr. existed when I made my list, I would have moved Luis Robert out.
Got it.
And I know the White Sox are brutal, but Luis Robert, like, you know, if you did just like the, he's at 35 homers, 17 steals, 271 on the batting average. And his runs and RBIs for how bad is the White Sox have been should kind of total up by the end of the year at like probably 170. This is a really big year for Robert. I know the strikeout rate has gone backwards from what we were excited about, and it's kind of an achievement that he's played 127 games. But you've got him in the second round. I probably, from this exercise, have him at like an early second rounder. But just talk to me about Luis Robert, what you're seeing here, if you're going to be interested in any shares next year.
Maybe this is my Bobby Witt error, but the plate skills just scare me off of Luis Robert too much. I can't take a guy who strikes out close to 30% of the time. That doesn't walk that much, that doesn't have that batting average floor, and a guy that chases and makes as little contact as he does. The chase rate's improved, but it's still at 42.8%, and that's the bottom 5th percentile of the league. The contact is also down there in the bottom 10th percentile of the league, 12th percentile of the league. So as good as he is and as tantalizing as the home run totals and the steals are, there's too much plate discipline risk for me. That being said, I would definitely take him in the early stages of the second round and can totally see why he's considered a first rounder.
Yeah, I think this calls back to me like, I forget. I mean, it was probably a year and a half ago, and on rates and barrels, Eno and DVR were talking about this type of profile and how when you're younger, when you have elite bat speed, it can make up for mm-hmm. some of the poor decision-making skills. And then that kind of bites you when you get closer to 30 and beyond, which is, you know, we've talked about this for Arozarena and Adelis Garcia, but Robert at just age 26, like I do think when you draft Robert, he's going to be like a play for the overalls for NFBC, because when you draft Robert, it's at a spot in the draft where there won't be any guys left that could get 60 or 70 homers plus steals. and his career batting average is .283. Like he across 68 games in 2021, he hit .338, which is crazy. .284 last year, .271 this year. So I'm trying to learn a little bit from me sprinting away from a Rosarena and Adelise, and it feels like this might be the one that I know it's process over results a little bit. You know, going back to the little Piranha question of old. But, man, yeah, this, like, if the White Sox actually had a good season, this could look like 40-25-100-100 with a .270 batting average.
Yeah, and who knows, if he's on the White Sox next year.
Yeah, that's a great point. In a points league, less interested because of the issues you brought up. But in 5x5, like, this is kind of everything you're looking for. So that's Robert. I think we were in agreement there that kind of early second round. Last thing is, we didn't talk about a pitcher, Steve. It kind of killed me to throw Garrett Cole at 12, but I do figure that one pitcher will make it. And while the strikeouts have been down for him compared to like a Spencer Strider, even Kevin Gausman, which was my kind of challenge, bold prediction on Gausman over Cole this year, Garrett Cole's like ratios still stand out with like sub 3 ERA. The whip is, you know, I don't have it in front of me, but it's like 106 or something. And a lot of those other guys are like 115 in that range. So, yeah, it's do you think we'll have any pitchers in the first round, I guess? And if so, do you think it's Cole?
Yes and no. I think it should be Spencer Strider if I were to take a pitcher in the first round. I'm a sucker for strikeouts, and that's the guy. That's the guy who strikes out 40% of the batters he faces now, or whatever, 38% of the batters he faces. So, give me Strider if I were to take a pitcher in the first round. I wouldn't, but if I would, it would be Strider.
I love it. Yeah, this is a head and the heart thing. I would never draft Cole for some reason. I just don't like the guy. But Strider could very well be there. I think he's already at like 240Ks, so that by the end of the year should be well above the 250 mark, and he'll probably be alone in that company. So love it, man. That's a long show, but this was fun. I don't know if you guys are tuning in, you want us to hit any other topics, but this was therapeutic more than anything for Steve and I.
Or guys that we missed that you think should be in the first round. I know we had some fringe guys here that, you know, we're an hour and a half into this episode, so we're not going to get into it. But maybe we'll save it for a future episode or some off-season prep there. So, excited. I mean, this is our last episode of August. We're in September now, so... Getting into,
I love that it's like, yeah, we're excited.
Yeah,
like,
we talked about it last year. Away. We talked about it last year, right? Like when we started diving into prep, like it was a fun time. Like the season's such a grind to get into a different mode is super fun. So it was nice to do this.
It is, and it happens pretty fast where like the trends start formulating, and you know, it's not that much different between October and January. So like it is a lot of fun, and a shameless plug for you guys to hang with us all off season. So appreciate you guys hanging with us on a very long show in the ending hours of August. Happy September. If you guys are still grinding in your leagues, best of luck to you. We will be on every Thursday the rest of the way. And feel free to email or tweet anytime. You can email the show, winsabovefantasy@gmail.com. On Twitter, we're at winsabovepod. I'm at @van_verified, and Steve is at @stav8818. That rounds us out for episode 115. Thanks to you all, and thanks to you, Steve, for talking baseball. Been a blast.
Thanks for listening, guys. Good luck in the playoffs and down the home stretch in your leagues. Pulling for you.